This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan. The Greater Klang Valley is a wonderfully diverse city of 8 million people and growing. And if there's one thing the millions of people share is our frustration with the consistently congested streets as we sit still in our cars. But what can we do about it? SOGDEM Malaysia is a new centre-left think tank. They recently released a research paper arguing that the central problem is the lack of a complete public transport network anchored by buses. They argue that if we are serious about tackling this problem, the Klang Valley needs 7,000 more buses on the road. So joining me on the show today are the co-founders of SOGDEM Malaysia, Rajesh Vishakaran and Kushalini Mahendran, who are also respectively the ADUN of Bukit Gasing and a councillor at Petaling Jaya City Council. As always, this conversation is also available as a podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on Spotify, the BFM app, or wherever we get your podcasts from. Rajesh, Kusha, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Hi.
So before we unpack the paper you wrote, what is SOGDEM Malaysia?
SOGDEM Malaysia, to me, is a centre-left think tank. So right now in Malaysia, we have only one other centre-left think tank, which is REFSA, whereas you see a lot of the other centre and centre-right think tanks getting funded by big corporations as well as, you know, other foreign governments who want to bring in the economic principle of the right. So I think in Malaysia, we need a balance. We need a centre-left alternative to see how things can be done through the social democracy ideology. And that's SOGDEM Malaysia's role.
Before we talk about buses specifically, okay, right, why do we need a complete public transport network? And what are the challenges faced by people of the Klang Valley today?
Well, okay, that's a huge question. Now, the reason we need a complete network is so that people can go from any one place in the Klang Valley to any other place by public transport. And that will eliminate the need for a car. Then you can get a car optionally or you can get a motorbike optionally, but you would have the option to go by public transport like you would in places like Singapore, London, Tokyo and so on. So today in KL, that's not an option for many people. It is an option for some. Some people happen to live and work and have their whole ecosystem around where the public transport is. But because public transport isn't widely available throughout the Klang Valley, or some parts are not connected, are not well connected, and travel time will take too long, and so people will have to resort to driving. Like for me, from my house to my workplace is 15 minutes by car. It's about 2 hours by public transport.
Wow.
So sometimes you happen to live nearby, but there isn't a connecting route. And so it takes you forever if there is any connection at all. And for some people, there just isn't a connection that is walkable from their house. So they have to use private transport. So that's why it's really important that we complete the network. And this is not unusual. If you look at cities around the world, London, Tokyo, Taipei, Seoul, the network is complete. And in places like that, then people truly have an option to not buy a car and to use public transport if they desire to.
But what is the problem with the way things are today? Because like you say, like people don't have an option, but why is that option necessary? Why can't people just get a car and go anywhere they want?
All right. So traffic jams.
Okay.
So the long or short of it is traffic jams. Now, if you look around the world, small towns, small cities can get by being car-centric. Now, if you are a city of 200,000 people, no problem. Everyone drives and you'll be fine. As long as you design the roads properly, you will not have gridlocks. But when you hit 500,000 and above, it gets a bit more challenging, but still possible. Now, you look at a lot of American cities, they are less than 1 million people and they're very car-centric and they're fine. If you look at Australian cities, they're very public transport focused, and then they do well that way. But if you look at America, comparable cities, they get by fine when it's sub 1 million. When you go above 1 million, it gets really challenging. But when you go above 2 million people, I've not found a city in the world that isn't stuck in traffic jams or have good public transport. You have no choice. If you don't have good public transport above 2 million people, you will be stuck in traffic jams. And Malaysia has that problem in the Klang Valley because we are 8 million people now in the Klang Valley and growing. We're going to hit 10 million according to the projections. So we have to have good public transport or we have to resign ourselves to a life of traffic jams. And that is what we face today. Most of us are stuck in traffic jams during the morning and evening rush hour. And sometimes even outside of the rush hour, we are stuck in traffic. Smaller towns in this country, the secondary cities in this country could get by. Ipoh, if you do the road networks properly, would not have traffic jams, could get by because it's less than 1 million people. Same goes to Kuantan. Same goes to Sandakan. But you can't do that in KL. Penang hitting the borderline, Johor Bahru hitting the borderline. But once you reach a size of KL, nowhere in the world is there a successful city of 8 million people that is car-centric.
When we talk about public transport, we there's trains, there's buses, and so on and so forth, right? Why are y'all stressing on the importance of buses in this conversation?
There is a cost element to any form of public transport. Would I prefer to ride the MRT over the bus? Yes, for sure. Definitely I would. But constructing MRTs are expensive. How much of MRT lines can we possibly build in the Klang Valley to cover the whole Klang Valley? Downtown New York, well covered by subway. Downtown Tokyo, well covered by subway. Singapore is also very well covered by the MRT in the city centre. But all of the cities, even with a very high usage of public transport, have also shown us that buses play a very important part to provide routes where it is not economically feasible to build a train line. Even though a train line that is not underground, a train line that is overground, it's still very expensive. And so if you have an objective of wanting to put out a total coverage, you want connectivity throughout the city, you don't want to leave any part of the city unconnected, then you have to resort to buses to connect the last bits at the very least. And in fact, not just the last bits, even the main bits in the middle. Singapore has thousands of buses. Hong Kong has thousands and thousands of buses. London as well. And they have demonstrated that you can't run away from this. You can't just build a city purely on train lines alone. As much as I love to ride the MRT, but I have to accept the fact that it's a financial issue. We've got to be practical about building the complete network.
So, Kusha, Rajiv touched briefly on examples from other countries, how things are in the US and you know, London and Singapore and Hong Kong. How are we doing compared to those countries? How would you benchmark Malaysia?
Okay, so the method I use to benchmark is I look at the number of railway lines, right? Mm-hmm. So in the publication paper, you can see there's a screenshot of the Google map of all the railway lines as well as how far the city expands. So Klang Valley is the size of 2,500 square kilometers, but if you count just the greater Klang Valley, KL and also the PJ, Subang Jaya, Shah Alam surrounding the greater Klang Valley, it's about the size of London. So let's say we benchmark the size of London, the population is 8 million, the population is also 8 million in London. London has about 11 rail networks, but London has 8,643 buses. Whereas in Malaysia, we have 9 different types of rail networks and we only have 724 buses. This is less than 10% of London's buses that is running on the roads. Okay, I'm not going to sing praises of London because a lot of their public transport system was made through colonization of us.
Right.
But at the same time, it is very important to recognize that even such first world city depends and relies on the bus services to get people moving in and out of the railway lines.
So your study is really extensive and even dives into the different kinds of route planning in urban centres. Could you explain, Kusha, the difference between authority-planned model, operator-driven model and hybrid model and which one would work best for the Klang Valley?
So authority plan model means the state decides. The state decides how many bus routes we need, how far we need to cover, which are the areas we need to cover, and then we can, you know, tender out the bus routes, for example, using gross cost model. This means that the authority decides how many stops each routes have, where does each bus go, and where exactly how are we going to cover the network. Right now in Malaysia, what's happening is bus operators go to APART and apply for a license. And as long as there's no other buses running the same route, they get the license to run the bus. I think this mindset needs to change drastically, because if we only keep using the operator planned model, which is used in third world countries in much smaller cities, where, you know, if the bus route is profitable, then the bus route will be run. But this will also leave many, many people behind, and we will not achieve our goal of a complete network, especially with Klang Valley growing up to 10 million people and we want a complete network. Then we will never, you know, achieve it through the profit driven model, because not every route is going to be profitable. And the hybrid model exists in Hong Kong, but even that hybrid model in Hong Kong, the bus services are used very poorly because Hong Kong is very train dependent.
Rajiv, how would you respond to people who say that that's the reason we don't want to, you know, we don't want to focus on public transport because it's very profitable. The state has to subsidize a lot. At most, maybe you can break even. And this tends to be the pushback sometimes from certain quarters. How do you respond to that argument?
There is cost to providing public transport. And I acknowledge, and I think everyone acknowledges, that it will not be profitable with the, you know, if you look at how it's run around across the world, it's probably only profitable in Hong Kong. It's not likely to be profitable in a city not as dense here in KL. It will have some costs. Is that a problem? I think not. I think it's okay that it has some costs. Guess what? Driving has a lot of costs as well. How much does it cost the government to put up the roads and maintain all that network of roads that are there to service the cars? How much does it cost the government to maintain the fuel subsidies, the petrol and diesel subsidies that we have today? It's a lot of government expenses that are going out to even maintain private vehicles. Now, the thing is, let's go back to the objective. This is our main city, our main economic center, and home to 8 million people. And also where you get a lot of travellers coming through. Not just foreigners, but even local travellers from other parts of the country frequently coming into KL for various purposes. So are we going to have a proper public transport system for other greater goods, for ease of travel, to stop the wastage of hours and hours in traffic jams, the mental anguish that the people have to suffer in traffic jams, the economic costs of traffic jams? Do we want to achieve these objectives? If we want to, I think the cost is worth investing in. Now, we've already invested a lot of money into public transport. MRT 1 and 2 is up and running. MRT 3, it's another at least 50 billion ringgit that's going to be pumped into it. But we have the LRTs, the KTM commuters. We have pumped in a lot of money into the rail network. And we are also spending a lot of money on operating costs, keeping them running. What we propose today is a slight step up, not even a major doubling, but just a slight step up in annual expenditure for the government, but something that can bring tangible results if you complete the network and if people can step out of their house and actually walk to a public transport node, be it a bus stop or a train station. You could actually walk out to public transport, and I think that's worth the investment.
Kusha, I want to get your thoughts on that as well, because I think Rajiv brings up something interesting where a lot of times people point at the costs and the profitability. But what Rajiv is saying is that, yes, there is a cost to it, but it's worth it because we are talking about building essentially the common good. Public transport is going to benefit so many people. We are talking about a city with 8 million people. What is your perspective on that?
I think right now we are right in the center. We have two ways to go. Either we're going to be the Manila, Bangkok, where we're stuck in massive traffic jams. It's a major gridlock city. Everybody is running through, you know, 4 or 5 hours of traffic, and that's the norm. Or we can go the other route where, you know, you see other cities like London and Singapore, where there is an option for people to drive, but at the same time, there is an equally equally equitable option for people to take public transport. And I think creating this choice for people is worth the investment, because if, let's say, I am, you know, starting my job, I'm at a 3,000 ringgit pay. If, let's say, the public transport network is complete, I don't have to buy a car. Buying a car is not an investment, it's an expense. And on top of that, I have to maintain the car and spend a lot of money on the car. Individually, you will relieve a lot of these expenses. So how do you tally, like, what level of government investment is worth, you know, relieving expenses for other young people in the country, for example?
So let's talk about your proposal, Rajiv. In your study, you wrote that your proposal is 7,000 buses, minibuses and DRT. So I think people know what buses are. But right. What are minibuses and DRT? And how did you come up with this 7,000 figure?
All right, let's dive into that. So buses, you know, what you've come to know in life. The buses that we tend to run in KL are the 12-metre buses. Mm. But we also have the slightly shorter ones at 8 metres. You might have seen some of them. It's not very common. But I think that depending on the load of the route, using the 12-metre bus or the 8-metre bus will be a decision case-by-case basis, as well as using vans for right. certain routes. Because the point is to have the coverage and to have the frequency. And as long as you get these two in, people will start to use it. Now, there'll be some routes where the ridership is lower because you're covering less dense areas and you have lower ridership and you don't have to put a big vehicle. You know, a 12-metre bus can, within sitting and standing capacity, be up to about 60 people. And that's not necessary on a lot of routes. So using vans, using the 8-metre buses are perfectly fine. So minibuses or vans are fine. Now, what is demand response transit?
Right.
This is an add-on to buses. The buses ply routes based on a fixed route and a fixed schedule. They go up and they go down based on the plan. And whether there's anyone on the bus or anyone in the bus stop, they will pass by the route predictably. And that helps people to plan their journeys accordingly. Demand response transit, DRT, is where you use the app to call the vehicle. Now, normally DRTs work in a zone to help people move around within the zone. And these vehicles will reach you on demand. And we have that in this country. So Kumpul was the
initiative that you championed.
Yes, that was what we championed to showcase that this thing works. And now DRTs are taking off in this country, not just in PJ, but all over the Klang Valley. Prasarana is dabbling into it. We have three companies now, not just Kumpul, but there's Trek Asia and there's Mobi running these services. Will they form part of the effort to complete the network? Yes, because in some parts of the Klang Valley, the demand isn't there and it could be replaced. A static bus route could be replaced with DRT if the community there is sufficiently on board with technology. If they aren't, then maybe it could be a hybrid of two things. Now, why 7,000? I think that is a number derived from looking at our benchmarks overseas. London, with 8,000 over buses, is similar size with the Klang Valley. If the Klang Valley, which has the same amount of land space, because if we're talking about how spread out is your city, you know, we're not as compact as Singapore, we're not as compact as downtown Hong Kong. So if the Klang Valley, which is as spread out as London is, then we should strive to have about the same number of buses in order to be able to provide the number of routes and frequencies that people would want to be able to use. Now, if your frequencies are every 1 hour, then people will not be attracted to take it, or you'll not be very possible for them to use public transport. So you need at least 15 minutes, if not 10 minutes frequencies for people to be comfortable to use the bus.
Right.
As well as, you know, manipulating the frequencies during peak hours.
Yeah.
And adjusting it according to, you know, when there are travels. And
So what would that look like? An example, perhaps?
Well, you could have some places like 5-minute frequencies during right. peak hours and 12 mm-hmm. minutes during off-peak. That's possible. But that comes down to the design route planning. But let's take the rule of thumb. If Hong Kong has 10,000 buses, if London has 8,000 over buses, Singapore has 5,000 over buses, then there's no way the Klang Valley can get by with less than 7,000 buses.
Right.
That's just not going to work. And so with the number of buses that we have now, less than 1,000, clearly it's not working. And the number 7,000 is like the starting point. In my opinion, that's the starting point. Maybe we'll have to go higher to 8,000-9,000. But the thing is, if you don't have that minimum quantity, you're not going to be able to roll out the services at the level that people, your users, would want to use it to be able to achieve anything meaningful.
Unpack that a little bit more for me, because there some will argue that, you know, it's these buses, the reason why we have so little is because there's no demand. So it's sort of a supply and demand kind of argument that they make.
Because you have so little buses, you can't run reliably good services. Let's look at the bus that goes from the Asia Jaya LRT station up to Section 17 PJ and come back. That bus runs once every 40 minutes. With frequencies like that, no one's going to wait for the bus. And so people don't use the bus. Now, if the bus was running regularly at 10 minutes frequency, like the PJ Green bus is, then people will use it. And you see people using the PJ Green bus frequently. Same area, same geographical area, same users, but very vastly different usage of the bus, because one has a reliable frequency and one does not. And that is something to key you in on the fact that KL people are willing to use the bus if the bus runs frequently enough, runs reliably enough. No one complains that the bus is too expensive. That's really not the grouse.
Right.
No one complains that the seat on the bus is too uncomfortable. I mean, of course, it could be better, but there's a good chance that if public transport picks up, you'd be standing in the bus anyway. Well, what people do complain is it's not reliable. Hmm. If the bus is supposed to leave at 7:46 a.m. from the LRT station to my office, and I need to get to my office on time, it has to leave at 7:46 a.m. And it cannot be like I'm standing there and waiting, and I'm not sure if I'm going to wait for half an hour more for the bus to move. Then I can't rely on that. And then I have to use my car to go to work, because I can't afford to be running late for work four times a week. When you have two little buses, people will not use it. And I can't blame people for not using it. But when you have sufficient number of buses, then there's a fair expectation on people to give it a try.
On the show with me today is Rajiv Rishakaran and Kushalini Mahendran, co-founders of SOCDEM Malaysia. We continue our conversation after the break. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and on the show with me today is Rajiv Rishakaran and Kushalini Mahendran, co-founders of SOCDEM Malaysia. And we're talking about the desperate need for there to be more buses in the Klang Valley. This conversation will also be available as a podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on Spotify, the BFM app, or wherever you get your podcasts from. If you are listening to this on Spotify, do give us a follow, drop us a review. It would be really, really helpful. So, is there also an element when we talk about reliability, right, Rajiv? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, I just came back from the weekend in Singapore because it was my cousin's wedding, and we traveled a lot of places with the buses, and it was very convenient. And what's interesting is that in Singapore, you go to the bus stop, there's something like the MRT, there's a mini board there and tells you when the next bus is coming, what bus is coming. In Malaysia, what I realize is people either wing it, hope for the best, or they people who are a bit more tech savvy, they are a bit in the know, they will download like private apps and all that track the bus services and the bus routes and all of that. How do we fix that element?
I think that is a relatively easy element to fix. Of all the things that we need to do to fix buses, and that is one of those things that we need to do. Journey planners, the timing on the bus stops, more comfortable bus stops, all these things need to be fixed. But these are all relatively smaller ticket items compared to the fact of rolling out the next MRT line or to roll out 7,000 buses. These are all relatively small and relatively quicker items to roll out. If you get the big stuff, like you get the 7,000 buses right, I'm very confident the same guys who get the 7,000 buses right will get those things right too.
Absolutely. And Kusha, what do you think of the current bus routes? Because we barely have any bus lanes. We obviously have bus routes. What do you think? Is it sufficient from that level? Are we looking at we need more roads? We need to build bus lanes? We need to expand the routes and all of that? Or is it just a question of the routes are fine, we just need to add more buses to the road and then we are set?
Okay, let's talk about PJ, because you know, this is more data and facts driven, and because also MPPJ hired a transport planner and our organization, you know, cannot hire a transport planner yet. But For example, in PJ, to have a complete network, we need 105 bus routes. Currently, we're running the PJ City Bus. We're running 6 routes only. Because
you need 105 and yes.
We have 6 routes. Wow. Because right now, the PJ City Bus is paid for by the local council. And, you know, the local council doesn't make that much money.
Right.
It should be the federal government's jurisdiction. And I will continue to lobby in my term as a councillor, you know, to increase the number of buses in PJ. But yes, for example, we need 106 routes to cover the entire PJ. So I'm talking from your Taman Medan to your Kota Damansara, the entirety of MPBJ's jurisdiction. The 6 routes that we do run is run at a 15-minute frequency. So no matter whether there's passengers at the bus stop or not, the bus will come every 15 minutes. And this 6 routes has seen a very huge ridership of Malaysian ridership. So 98% of our ridership is Malaysian. And Malaysian people who are using, you know, who are in the city are using the buses in these 6 routes. Now, if we can expand it to 105 routes, I am quite confident that this number will double. But this also shows that we are vastly lacking in bus routes because we don't have enough buses to run the routes. And these routes can be planned and should be planned by authorities so that we get the complete network. See, for example, when you ask me, I know that PJ needs 105 routes, but that's because MPBJ hired a transport consultant who mapped out what are the routes that is needed and how exactly to plan and, you know, make sure that the entire of PJ is connected. And the same thing needs to be done for the Klang Valley.
Why do you stress, do you stress that, you know, 98% of your ridership are Malaysians? Because the perception sometimes is that only the foreign laborers, yeah, and migrant workers take the bus. Is that why you stress the Malaysian ridership?
Yes, in a lot of my conversation with a lot of people, I'm not talking like, you know, civil service top ranking people, but in fact, the general public, because I'm trying to, you know, mobilize enough people to agree on this bus proposal. So the public transport advocates, of course, are very happy for this policy paper and they are in full support of it. But when I talk to the general public, the people who drive their cars, the answer is like, oh, but if you add buses, then we're just helping the foreigners because the only people who take the buses are foreigners. So I'm here to break that perception. It's not true. Malaysians do take the buses.
Absolutely.
And this is based on data, facts and figures.
So another thing, Kusha, is that this study mainly focuses on buses and we also highlight the challenges in expanding the rail network because, you know, trains, MRTs, LRTs, these are mega projects. You need to build so much infrastructure and all of that. But do we, while we push for more buses, do we also need to expand the rail network in the Klang Valley? Or are we at a situation where we feel the rail network in the Klang Valley, it's fine. As far as rail networks go, we just focus on other states. All we need in the Klang Valley right now are buses. Or do we still need to improve the rail network in the Klang Valley, build more, but it's just we just put that on hold for a bit and focus on getting the fundamentals, which is buses. How are y'all tackling this?
In my opinion, the current rail network with the current number of people is sufficient. We are lacking the buses because, you know, all these rail networks, they need to feed. The buses need to feed to these rail networks and then people can, you know, take the rail networks from wherever they're going back to the center of KL and then back from the center of KL to wherever they're going. But if the Klang Valley grows, let's say the Klang Valley grows unexpectedly at a rapid rate of 12 million people, suddenly our population is moved down south and then we see a different route planning, like people are moving in a different direction, then okay. Because, you know, there's a mass amount of people moving in that direction and it requires a rail infrastructure. But currently, our rail infrastructure is quite sufficient. But in my opinion, it's underused. Not every LRT line is underused, but a lot of the LRT and the KTM lines are underused because the buses are not feeding into it at a right frequency.
So it's not reaching its potential.
Yes, it's not reaching its potential. I also think that by adding the 7,000 buses, we will suddenly supercharge the use of all these rail networks because, you know, people are getting on their buses. It's a 15-minute frequency and they're going to their nearest LRT MRT, no matter where their nearest LRT MRT is.
Rajiv, what are your thoughts on this? Because right now, you know, a lot of our rail network is designed in a way to take people into KL City. Whereas if you're staying in Kota Damansara and you want to go to PJ Old Town, for example, there's still not much of a direct link in terms of trains and all. So how do you tackle that? Do you think buses can do the job?
So many, many, many years ago, there was a study by a foreign consultant on the origin and destinations of the Malaysian traffic, especially during the morning and evening rush hour. And I was actually surprised to see the results that most of the traffic is really going to and from KL in the morning and evening rush hour. And then to PJ is also quite a substantial amount, but a lot of the traffic is actually going from all over the Klang Valley to KL. And so it doesn't surprise me that that's where the rail lines are shaping.
Right.
Now, what about Kota Damansara to PJ Old Town. There's not enough traffic there to justify a rail line. Mm. But there's enough traffic to justify a bus line.
Right.
And that's where our paper comes in. Now, what we have in agreement at SOCDEM is that we need the 7,000 buses, at least 7,000 buses, to get the network complete. Whether the government wants to put in an additional rail line or additional two rail lines on top of that is fine with me. If they feel that they want to do that and they are able to afford to do that, then great. We have seen Singapore take a different tack. You know, Singapore had two main lines, the green line and the red line,
right,
for decades. And they build a complete network with buses to supplement those two rail lines. But then decades later, when their economy is doing well, they have lots of surpluses and they're able to better invest money, then more rail lines get built. And they're rolling out more and more rail lines that for a lot of travel within Singapore, now you don't have to use the bus at all. You can just use the rail. So if you talk about what's the priority, to me, the 7,000 buses is the absolute priority. The buses is the priority, but that doesn't mean that if you want to do the rail and you can afford to do the rail, why not? Now, a lot of rail projects take time to complete. From the time you conceptualize a rail line, you need to spend a good few years, maybe 3, 4, or 5 years, to design the line,
right,
to preserve the corridor for the line, to go through the necessary consultation processes, deal with the necessary objections before you can actually start physical work. Every rail line that we have had has gone through quite a bit of challenge. Things are not shovel ready where you decide you want to build a line and you can start construction work in 2 months. It's never going to be like that anymore. That's how things could be done 100 years ago or even 20 years ago, but not anymore today. We have a lot of public reactions to deal with and a lot of other considerations when you are building anything in a mature city like KL. And, you know, your utilities, your existing rail lines, your sewage lines, your highways, there are a lot of complications to designing the actual rail line. So by all means, have a conceptual plan. Selangor has a rail corridor master plan.
Right.
It has identified 12 railway corridors in Selangor that the government feels it's necessary to have a railway line somewhere down the road. It's an ambitious plan. It's a plan that has to be executed by the federal government because state governments in this country just don't generate revenue to be able to undertake such massive projects on their own. But identifying 12 corridors by Selangor, that's visionary. That's good. That's good to have in mind. That's good for people to plan their investments. If you're talking about where to build the next industrial park, where to build the next township, knowing this is important. Knowing this is important is also to prevent developments from coming to block the future rail line. So if you know that, okay, you need a rail line along this corridor, don't go and put a highway there and then make it impossible to build a rail line in the future. So I have no objections to people wanting to plan more rail lines, but it does not take priority over buses. That cannot be the way we go on from here. We have spent the last 20 years being more rail-centric. In fact, ever since the late 90s, when we've set up the two LRT lines, the last 25 years has been very rail-centric, not bus-centric. It's not about liking buses over rail. It is about liking a complete network over an incomplete network.
So I think you bring up a good point about how there is a limit to what the state government can do. Any massive projects need to be by the federal government. I'm wondering, when it comes to, let's say, 7,000 buses, will we need federal government intervention, or will the state government be able to take on this by ourselves? And how much is this 7,000 buses going to cost?
Let's look at how much 7,000 buses are going to cost. Now, I prefer to not count how much it'll cost to buy 7,000 buses because that doesn't paint you a correct picture.
Right.
What will paint you a correct picture is the cost of the buses, the fuel to run the buses, whether we are doing electric or diesel or hopefully hydrogen in the future, the drivers, maintenance costs, And all of this can be summarized into we propose leasing the buses. Now, PJ, and in fact, all of the Slango buses are leased from Rapid KL. PJ pays Rapid KL 800 ringgit per bus per day for Rapid KL to run the buses for us. So with or without passengers, Rapid KL's KPI is to run the buses according to the timetable, and then they get paid 800 ringgit per bus per day. Now, if you take that figure and you expand it out, that 7,000 buses will cost us about 5 billion ringgit
right.
a year to run. Will we be able to recover some of the money? Yes, because of increased ridership, you will get back at least 2 billion, 2 to 3 billion ringgit from revenue from the increased ridership when you have a complete network. So will the government still have to subsidize some amount of running costs? Yes, they would. We've talked about it earlier a few minutes ago on why I think it's worth it. And I think the benefits outweighs the costs. And as government, we do spend on social good all the time. And I think this is one social good that is worth spending on. So it's going to cost us about 5 billion. It's something that state governments probably will never be able to undertake. Now, if you look at the Slango's budget, it's 2.5 billion a year. Right now, it will not be able to fund such an exercise compared to the federal government's budget of over 300 billion a year.
Let's go for another quick break. On the show with me today is Rajiv Rishakaran and Kushalini Mahendran, co-founders of Sogdem Malaysia. We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan. And on the show with me today is Rajiv Rishakaran and Kushalini Mahendran, co-founders of Sogdem Malaysia. And we're talking about the desperate need for there to be more buses in the Klang Valley. This conversation is also available as a podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on Spotify, the BFM app, or wherever you get your podcast from. So, what are the challenges in making this a reality? Because a lot of times when we have conversations about public transport, it feels like it sort of withers out. Maybe in PJ and all, you do see a progress. But overall, like when you look at it at a national level, even at a state level, sometimes it doesn't seem to have the kind of momentum. People seem disinterested. When I say people, I mean like the political class, for example. So what are the is it just a lack of political will? What are we dealing with when it comes to trying to push for the expansion of public transport?
Well, my personal take on this, there's two problems. One is money. Nearly every problem in this country comes down to money. We find it very difficult to raise taxes in any form. Even raising the SST from 6% to 8% has courted so much of brickbats from the opposition, and the public is in really no mood to entertain any new taxation, any increase in taxation. And it's very difficult for the government to suggest this. So when your finances are limited, you have good intentions pulling you in every direction. We talk about public transport wanting a couple of extra billion a year. That may not seem big in the spectrum of 300 over billion ringgit, but it's actually quite big. Every 100 million counts. You've got schools pulling for more money. You know, the number of sekolah daif that we still have in this country and that needs to be repaired. School roofs that need to be repaired. School toilets that hopefully is all repaired after the PMX's push last year. Right. Hopefully it's all done. But a lot of schools need repairs. That's a huge demand on money for that. Healthcare is falling apart. Healthcare needs a lot more money. If you're ever going to keep it going, we need to pay doctors appropriately to retain the doctors and nurses in our healthcare system, as well as to cope with the huge lines and queues at the major hospitals in this country. So where are we going to spend the money now? Public transport, healthcare, education, every facet of our society, every ministry in this government is crying out, please give me a bit more so I can deliver better to the people. So money is a very real problem. The second very real problem is the political will. Because does everyone believe that we need a complete, holistic public transport network? And sadly, I would say that that's not true. Among the 222 MPs that we have today, there are enough believers, but probably not enough believe strongly in it. And if people don't believe in it, if the decision makers, if your top civil servants are not sold on the idea, if our members of parliament are not sold on the idea, if our cabinet is not sold on the idea, then when it comes to the financial tussle, it's not probably going to win compared to other pressing needs. Now, what about the public at large?
Right. You know,
32 million Malaysians, do they feel strongly about this? Every political poll done consistently shows that this does not rank anywhere near the top 10 of the people's wish.
Right.
So it does rank highly for some people like yourself.
Yes, absolutely.
And me.
But unfortunately, if you want to go like on a national survey or the Klang Valley level, like what are the things that affect you? Cost of living.
Right.
Always number one. And many other issues that come after that, this unfortunately does not break into the top 10.
Right.
So if the people are not clamoring for it, the politicians may not have the conviction that this is a priority, the senior civil servants do not have the conviction, then that's a challenge. So this is something that we are aiming to do in SOCTEM, to create that awareness, to create that conviction. And then if we can cross that barrier to get enough people on board to have that conviction that we need a complete network, if not in the secondary cities in this country, at least in KL, then we'll be one step closer.
Right.
We'll not get there because we still have the money problem, but we'll get one step closer. But once we have that conviction, it'll be a little bit easier to get the money sorted out.
Yeah. Kusha, I want to get your thoughts on this as well, because earlier you mentioned as well about how you're trying to build momentum, you're trying to get people on board to lobby. What are the challenges you face when you talk to people about public transport? Because Rajiv's right. I personally, not just politically, but personally as an individual, I love public transport. I'm all about, you know, building well-connected cities that people can walk everywhere and you can cycle everywhere and then you can take the train everywhere and buses. I love how when cities are designed that way. What is the challenge when you try to engage with people?
Malaysians love their cars.
Right.
So in a conversation with one of my friends, actually close friend, who's not political, not at all, you know, discussing public policy for fun, more like, you know, should we have more buses? Like, is this something the government should do? And then my friend was like, huh? More buses? On the road, it's already so jammed. You want some more buses? It will be more jammed. She can't imagine that when I suggested that more buses means, you know, some of us take buses sometimes and
The congestion is going to reduce.
The fact that they can't even imagine a life where they leave their cars behind is our challenge number one, to mobilize the entire country to stand behind something like this. And the other conversation I had with another friend was like, but my car has my entire wardrobe, you know. What if I need to go for meeting A and look a certain way and I need to go in for a site visit, you know, much later in the day and I need to change my shoes, I need to do this and do that. Everything is in my car. How am I supposed to leave my car behind? So we love our cars, okay? And I'm not saying we need to abandon our cars to get this plan going.
Yeah, because you're not suggesting banning cars or anything like
that.
No, I'm
not.
Right.
Yeah, but at the same time, even if we can increase, right now our ridership is at about 20%. Even if we can increase our ridership from 20% to 40%, if I can convince just 20% more people to take the bus and the train, and the only way I will start lobbying for them to do that is when we have a complete network, because otherwise it's very unfair to tell people to take the bus and the train when there's no appropriate frequency. But even then, with just a 20% increase, our roads will be declogged. Because the road doesn't follow like, 50% more cars, that means 50% more traffic. It's not a linear graph.
Right.
But the fact that most Malaysians cannot imagine a life where they leave their cars behind at home is my stumbling block number one.
Absolutely. I think that's very... We are a car addicted nation, and that's definitely a huge challenge. Now, Rajiv, because you are here, of course I have to ask you about PJD Link. It's something we keep on asking because you are one of the vocal people who are, you know, who really at least explicitly push back against it. Why does the PJD Link project keep coming up? I think a lot of people, when you look at activists, people are not in favor of it. Many neighborhoods are not in favor of it. We have seen the signs, Banta, PJD Link and all of that. But at the same time, We want to empathize with people who complain about the massive traffic jam. And this is where those in favor of the highway project will say, see, you know, it's huge traffic jam. It takes ages for us to get from point A to point B. And that is exactly why we need the PJD link. Well, how do you respond to that? And would building better public transport network be a better alternative to PJD link?
To the credit of the government is not trying to solve traffic by building more highways. The government is not asking companies to come forth and construct particular highways. The government is not designing highways and saying, please come build them. The government is not asking the private sector to please come suggest highways to us. It's not doing that. I think we recognize, and I think largely, while they may not have the enthusiasm for public transport the way I do, I've not met senior civil servants or many politicians who believe that building more highways solves the problem, to their credit. However, there are enough companies who believe that they can make a business case out of proposing a highway. And it's not just the PJD link. There's a Bangi Putrajaya highway that is being proposed. There's one in the Klang. And then there's one from north to south Klang. There's one on the Klang River, east to west of the Klang Valley. So these private companies are dreaming up and planning out projects on their own, uninvited, uninitiated by the government. They are planning it on as a business case for themselves. They will take out all the investment. They propose that they will come up with all the expenses, and then they will collect the toll revenue to cover their expenses as well as make a profit. So I don't believe that these highways are going to solve the problem. The only realistic way that we're going to solve our traffic problems is to have a complete public transport network. That is the only way. There is no amount of road building that will ever get us out of this mess. There is no city in the world of 2 million people and above that is car-centric and does not suffer massive traffic jams. So there is, unfortunately, bad news for those out there who are hoping that highways can solve the problem, that really there isn't a case in the world that demonstrates this. So we have to have good public transport. Will we still have people driving cars? Yes. No one is ever saying we go for 100% public transport usage. No one is even saying we're going for 70% public transport usage. The Selangor government made a target of 60%. And if we land somewhere at the 40 to 50%, that would be a huge improvement to our quality of life. If we can go to 60%, then we start to get to where the more established cities like Singapore and Taipei are at. But if they say we don't get to that in the next 10 years, we could at least get to 40%, and we will see tremendous improvement in the quality of life. There are many things that make travelling much faster. For example, bus lanes. If on the federal highway, can you imagine your three lanes? Most of federal highway is three lanes. One lane is a bus lane. I think today you'll be very angry because that bus lane will be empty most of the time because we don't have many buses. But can you imagine a few years from today, if we get this plan adopted by the government, that three lanes in the federal highway, one is a bus lane. Non-stop buses are speeding down at 50, 60, 70 kilometers an hour and two lanes of cars stuck in traffic. People will look at the buses and like, you know what? I think I'll make a switch. And that's the dream.
And we don't need 100% of the people to make the switch. Even if 40% of people look at the buses and feel that way, it's a win already.
Before we wrap this conversation up, would each of y'all have a final message for us on the importance of buses and why we need it now?
I think we need it not just now, we needed it yesterday.
Absolutely.
But if I have a final thing to say, yes, is that if you believe in what we are saying, reach out to your Member of Parliament. Wherever you are in the Klang Valley or even outside the Klang Valley, reach out to your Member of Parliament on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. They're all on, nearly every Member of Parliament is out there on social media. Reach out to them and talk to them about what we are proposing. Ask your Member of Parliament, does he support or does he not support a complete network? Let's just ask a simple question, a complete network. And if you support a complete network, can you push for this in Parliament?
Kusha?
My finishing thoughts is SOGDEM is asking for three things. A complete network, an authority-planned network through gross cost model, as well as to include buses as the main focus in RMK-13. Now, if you look at RMK-12 and RMK-11, they were very, very rail-centric, which is very fair and very fine. 10 years ago, you know, we needed the rails, we needed the infrastructure to come up. But right now, the rails that cost 50 billion ringgit versus our buses that cost about 5 billion ringgit. The buses will have a huge, significant impact in completing these networks compared to any other rail lines that can be built in the next future. So I'm not saying don't build any more rail lines, but before we build the next rail line, can we consider, please, to add our buses first so our network is complete? That's what I have to say.
On that note, Kusha, Rajiv, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're most welcome.
Thanks for having us.
I've been speaking to Rajiv Rishakaran and Kushalini Mahendran, co-founders of SOCDEM Malaysia. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.